Nina has a topic to talk about.
So last night I was afraid for the steps in the dark, and I went into the car, Benji's car, and Ajahn was sitting there, and I talked about my fear in the dark, and she gave me a few very good reminders, like about fear, because it's always concerns oneself, and it is accumulated from life to life, but one has to build up courage. And I keep on saying, she said, that my panya is so weak and that it is not enough. But she said, well, there is some panya. And if I say my panya is weak, not enough, it is again saying this with itself. And I said that I was thinking of future trips and had fear that I could not make it. But she said, well, it depends on conditions, of course. One has to go along with conditions. I hope I have said this complete, or if you can add something, because for me it's so precious to have a reminder about daily life, very precious moment.
So I think about understanding reality, because there are realities right now, but not enough understanding. So everything is still belong to I, like hardness here, I'm touching something. This cannot be changed, because hardness must be always that which is conditioned to be hard. And if there's no experiencing at all, it cannot appear at all. So it's only just realities. It depends on the development of understanding, not I who tries, but who try very much to have it. Because it's impossible because of the very dense and thick and great avijja. So only few words cannot make it completely fall away, that idea of self. But by hearing more and considering more, it's established so that it can condition moment of thinking about that which is now appearing according to conditions. Because you see that it must be moment of understanding that nothing at all. See, even just this word, why? Because it's conditioned just to appear very, very short and then no more at all in samsara. Hearing this on and on and on until it's time to begin to understand closer and closer, not advance the regular experience, the arising and falling away and nothing's left. That's why it's on its way. No one there at all. But once one understands that it's true, we continue on. Because otherwise, there's no moment to understand the truth of whatever arising and falling now. Everything just now arising and falling away, different doorways. So even at moment of touching, see, it's not I who tries to have sati. But when sati is there, panya knows how come the conditions for sati to be aware unexpectedly by itself. And when panya develops, no more, just then, only that. And the truth is that when there is touching, hardness appears. But what about the other realities which appear? It means that there must be no hardness at moment of seeing, no visible object at moment of hearing. These words will never change. So just depend on parami, because when wholesome reality does not arise, it means that they are conditioned for more and more unwholesomeness, which cannot understand whatever appears now. That's why I do good and study Dhamma.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only then in one's life the best thing to live, to understand.
It's so helpful for daily life, all you say. Yes.
Until it's one's own understanding of moment with sati and moment without sati.
Yes.
Or not moment of samasati yet. But by understanding the difference between pariyati and patipati, one knows that the conditions for samasati must be right understanding from hearing, considering.
Like we discussed yesterday, the worry and the fear, it's endless, always endless objects to be afraid of or worry about or be concerned about, and long stories about what will happen tomorrow, what will happen next year, what happens if I can't come, what happens if I do come, and just always lost in the story about me and what will happen, and not seeing that the problem is not understanding, seeing now, visible object, reality now, that's conditioned totally, unexpectedly at each moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that discussion is very useful.
Yes.
Otherwise, one just read it.
Yeah, just read it. Yes. Different.
That is very true, because we know a lot of people in Vietnam, when they read the books that are translated into Vietnamese, even the discussions we had in Hanoi or in Ho Chi Minh, and they said, oh, that's wonderful, and they like it very much. But when they have the chance to discuss, then it shows that there's not yet enough understanding. Very far from that, they still think about practicing, and they think that what Achan is teaching is practicing. And when Achan talking about seeing now, it's like trying to tell us to try to understand seeing now or something like that. So
whatever appears, we are talking about that. And Panya begins to understand whatever appears very surely as short, because hearing is not seeing and thinking is not seeing.
Sometimes you're saying that if we don't put forward our views, then we are likely to go with wrong understanding.
Right.
I first met Achan in the discussions in Thailand the first time. Everything Achan said, I found it true. But still, until we met Achan again in Vietnam, when we invited you and had more discussions, that we could understand better. Without our wrong understanding exposed, we cannot have better understanding. And we usually, I think, we select from what we read, what we think that is it our thinking or our understanding, and we just ignore the rest, and that happens very often.
Like in the example I gave yesterday, when I mentioned that friends say, "Oh yes, Ajahn just encourages us to do good deeds all the time," but when I listen to Ajahn, what I hear her reminding anyone about is understanding at this moment. And understanding more about Chitta now, no matter what we do, because how will we know what is good deed otherwise without any understanding? So I think, as you say, we selectively listen to what we would like to hear. And I'm quite sure the friend that Anne mentioned, she had a chat with, if he were here, he would probably think we're all talking about patipati or practice, and because one has one's own idea, and then one collects more support for that. So it's only when one's ideas are really questioned, well, what do you mean by this? What is this? What is that? That people actually begin to consider and understand what their idea is.
Yes.
Otherwise it's not questioned or not really considered.
It's like we take our wrong understanding and try to, and when we hear the true Dhamma, the first thing we do is try to fit it around our wrong understanding, and it takes some, I like the way you say the wrong understanding exposed. Until that happens, then we can try to fit it, what we're learning, around the wrong understanding. But it's so important, as you say, to be able to ask questions, to have the opportunity, even if you're not asking questions here, other people ask those questions and realize that with wrong view, it will never be properly understood.
And we talk about whatever appears in order to become accustomed to the nature of it as not self. Otherwise, there's no conditions to condition awareness, even it appears. That's why we keep on talking about hardness, because there's hardness, and the nature of it is that which arises to be just hard. That's why, even right now, it depends on conditions to understand moment with sati and without sati. The object is exactly the same, but right understanding begin to be there, understanding it according to what one has heard, more or less, by conditions only. That's why the development of right understanding must be very natural, because everything are conditioned and appear right now. No matter right or left, in front or back, everywhere. No one there at all. Born alone, see alone, think alone, die alone. To be wholesome alone, unwholesome alone. If one still takes the reality as for self, it's impossible to see that each is conditioned. No one can do anything at all. Seeing is here now, see, by conditions. Everything's by conditions. But by not hearing enough, considering enough, it's very difficult to understand that which arises and falls away in succession as that which is there all the time. But actually, each moment is different, never be the same.
More and more subtle kinds of wrong understanding have to be exposed on and on.
Would you elaborate?
Yes, I think it's useful if you elaborate a little on more subtle kinds of wrong understanding.
For example, one might think, okay, now I've heard that it's visible object seen, no one there, so the wrong understanding or taking it for something has been exposed. But so many little misunderstandings or wrong understandings, like yesterday Ajahn was talking about, when one's just following the details in the book, and it can become like another practice, thinking if one learns the Pali words or the details that this is the development of understanding, or if one thinks one dresses very simply or just lives in a small place that this is a kind of support for understanding. So many ways that there can be wrong understanding, like when one hears about realities, trying to understand for a moment something like this. So it's more and more wrong understanding to be exposed, because only the Sotapanna has completely eradicated wrong understanding.
Yes, another example, like we hear often, Panya is not yet enough, Panya is not yet enough, but we think of self having not enough Panya, and that is quite the point, you know. And if you are not reminded, you don't know it, like in the discussion.
Or we think of, when one thinks Panya not enough, quite naturally sometimes the thought arises, what can I do to have more Panya? And that's a moment of wrong understanding. And I think it's always important to remember that it's moment by moment. Some moments there can be some moments of some level of right understanding, and very shortly after, moments of wrong understanding. And when Panya can tell the difference, that's useful.
Yesterday there was the example, the helpful, like helpful to study Pachi as well.
Yeah.
Okay, only Panya can know at any moment whether what the cheetah is, but it can be very subtle.
For example, right now, many realities slip without understanding. I'm looking, I couldn't end, see, many, many moments slip away. What I take is Kun An, pick up the spoon, and so on, see. But all realities are not known at all. Only the idea of someone is there doing something, see. So how can there be the less attachment to the idea of self when there is no understanding of the true nature of whatever appears like? What is seen is only that which can be seen, a reality, because it's there with the four primary rupas. We can see only that with the hardness and softness, only that part, see. When there is no hardness and softness, nothing seen. So by understanding more about a reality at a time, for example, at moment of seeing, that which is seen cannot be anything else at all. Close one's eyes, that's all. It's gone. So how can there be the idea of someone as soon as there is seen? So many realities slip away as ignorance and the idea of something. That's why it has to be very, very fine, very subtle to really understand just one word or one reality at a time. That is the best way. For example, Dhamma, reality, it does not belong to anyone because it's conditioned by conditions all the time, not by anyone else. So the elements of reality keeps on rolling on and on by conditions. But wrong understanding and ignorance take that for I. But what is I? Can it be I? Seeing sees, that's all. As soon as it has a reason, it falls away instantly. Where am I? Each one is like that.
And also when there's little bit intellectual understanding, the anusaya for wrong understanding is still there very much.
Mm-hmm. And we know that subtle wrong understanding, just like attachment and ignorance, can arise instantly after seeing, even in that idle process, completely unknown. So there's much, much more subtle wrong view to be exposed.
That's why listen and listen in order to understand whatever appears.
When we see a person or a thing, we're not aware of the moment of thinking as distinct from the moment of seeing, because seeing just sees visible object. But the thinking follows very quickly behind, and already there is the idea of a person or thing. As I understand it, that thinking can be with or without wrong view, or with or without mana, or with or without attachment, or could be kusala or akusala. The development of understanding is not to stop that thinking occurring quickly like that. but really so that there is less wrong view when the thinking happens. And as banya is developed and realities are known more as they are, then the thinking still happens immediately, but it's not accompanied by the same degree of wrong view.
Apparently it just shows how little understanding there is. As John was talking, I was thinking about the point is to understand what appears. So it doesn't matter if there's thinking, a lot of thinking. But then the question I have is, what appears? What is the object that appears when there's thinking? When concept is the object.
But that is thinking of thinking. So it's not just want to understand that, but without that which can experience, can there be that moment of sorry?
No,
that's why instead of thinking about what are there in the books, what about this moment, just one word? Whatever appears now is real. And no one can change its characteristic. Because sound is sound, visible object is visible object. We don't have to come to think about Bhajya or anything at all. Just one word or one reality at a time to be confident in the truth, that the truth is not at the moment when there is seeing. The truth is seeing and that which is seen. Getting closer to what we have heard before at this moment, to develop understanding of seeing and visible object. Or at moment of hearing, sound is real. At that moment there is no one, no other thing else, only that which experiences sound, so that only sound appears at that very moment. No one there. Understanding reality as no self, little by little. Otherwise we select to understand thinking and the object of thinking, while seeing, thinking, hearing are only that which can experience, no matter when. That's why at moment of seeing it seems like where is the seeing which is not self, but actually it's that which sees. And at moment of hearing there can be thinking, sound, and what is that which experience sound. But the experiencing is that reality which arises to experience no matter what. By then one can see that no matter it is visible object which is seen or sound which is heard, that because of the experiencing arises and experiencing it, we don't have to call seeing or hearing. Only that which experiences arise and see, and that which experiences arise and hear. Getting closer to the nature of the reality which just arises to experience that all. No one can change its characteristic. It arises to see, that's all. Arising and falling away. Just to see, arising and falling away, to hear. It is the reality which arises to experience. Otherwise, there are many differences like thinking. What is the object of thinking and what is thinking? Thinking is like seeing, hearing, but the object is different.
Yeah, and asking for the object of thinking, it could be implied that there's some understanding about visible object of sound, or maybe not. Maybe there's no understanding of those. Yeah. The same way there's no understanding about thinking and the object of thinking.
But when there is thinking or seeing or hearing with a little more understanding of that which experiences, no difference at all. Because one is not used to that which experiences, so that it's doubt what is the object of thinking.
and it's like a distraction, always a way of avoiding actually understanding what appears now, seeing or visible object or thinking which appears at this moment. Like even like yesterday, if one thinks, oh well, it'll be helpful to have some discussion about brain related issues or something, it's like a distraction from actually understanding what appears at this very moment.
When you say that, I still have that question. When you say that thinking appears, that's what I'm asking about. You know, what is that?
Like now, when it's not seeing or hearing, right at this very moment, it's thinking, not I or anyone, but it's just that moment of thinking, no matter what we call it, no matter what reality we call it or what pachaya, just that moment of thinking about whatever it is, just the moment of experiencing now.
What I got from what Achan said is that it's no trying so hard to find out is an obstacle.
Right.
But when you explain, then a question arises, because when you talk about seeing, experiencing visible object, that I understand, hearing, hear sound, that I understand. And when you say, when it comes to thinking, you're thinking, you're talking about thinking is a nama, thinking is that which thinks. And so when it appears in hearing, sound can appear or hearing can appear. So when thinking, you're only talking about thinking appearing. What about its object?
So when one's talking about hearing at that moment, understanding hearing, there's no sound appearing. It's just that citta, just that moment of hearing. And when seeing appears, it's just that citta which sees at that moment, no thought or idea of visible object, because it's just that citta which experiences at that moment. And the moment of thinking, it's just thinking, and usually it's thinking about an idea. But at the moment of thinking, understanding thinking, no idea in it, because it's just that reality of experiencing at that moment.
Right. So when there's hearing, only hearing appears and not sound.
Right.
So when thinking, thinking appears, but you're not talking about what the other end could be. Same as
when thinking,
one side is hearing and sound?
Like thinking.
Thinking and what?
Like now, thinking thinks about ideas, concepts. But thinking is a reality, so thinking appears. But it doesn't mean that in order to understand thinking, it cannot think about concept, because that is the nature of thinking. It thinks now, can think about anything, reality, concept, anything. But the nature of thinking is just the citta at this moment that is experiencing its object. But if one starts saying, well, it's thinking about trees or microphones, then it's not understanding thinking, because then one is lost again in the world of concepts and brains and people and things. So understanding thinking is not thinking about concepts.
Okay. In the case of seeing, seeing experiences visible object. So visible object can appear. Thinking thinks about concepts. Concepts does not appear, right? So in the case of thinking, only the thinking can be known, or its accompanying mental factors?
We talk about being lost in concepts. There is attachment to the concept. Sometimes the concept is all that appears. Well, appears here means is the object of attention. When we say seeing appears, for example, it's different from seeing consciousness arises. Because seeing consciousness arises all the time, but it doesn't always appear. Right? In fact, it can only appear to understanding and awareness. But concepts can appear in this general sense of the word, not a technical Dhamma term. It can appear that there are just concepts, because the attention is directed towards the concepts.
But those concepts can't be the object of understanding.
No, they can't be the object of understanding. But that doesn't mean that they can't appear that they are just concepts.
So, but when we talk, we're talking in the context of understanding what appears. In the case of seeing, visible object appears, or seeing appears. In the case of thinking appears, that can happen, I'm sure. And when there's attachment can appear. So when we say concepts appear, when you say concepts appear, we're not talking about something that can be understood, can be the object of understanding. Yet, as you say, that's our observation. A door appears, chairs appear, it seems like they are the object. They are what is appear. And so if we don't hear, if we don't have right understanding, we may concentrate and try to understand concepts, right?
And even some people who heard the Dhamma think that that's what needs to be done too.
Mm.
It seems when we think of hearing, we also think of sound, because hearing is what, sound is what can be heard by hearing. But when there is understanding and awareness, direct awareness of hearing, there is no sound. There is just awareness and understanding of hearing. Is that right? Just understanding the just awareness of the citta that hears.
Well, there's awareness of the hearing consciousness, not
yes,
awareness of the sound.
Okay,
that doesn't
okay.
mean that sound doesn't appear.
That's I understand
sound.
That.
Right.
But I guess where I'm going with it is it doesn't mean that sound doesn't appear, but at the moment of awareness of hearing, that's what there is awareness and understanding of. If there were to be awareness of sound as well, and a direct understanding of that, it would be in a different moment. So with thinking, I'm just trying this out here, with thinking, there can be awareness of the thinking, but there doesn't have to be awareness isn't the right word. There doesn't have to be a thought at the same time. The concept is not going to appear with the awareness of thinking.
The concept is not going to disappear, because there's thinking of concepts all the time. At a moment of thinking, at a moment of awareness of thinking, the concepts don't suddenly disappear, but the awareness is in addition to whatever's appearing. It doesn't make the world change. It
right.
just gives a better understanding of the way the world is.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that's right. And then the same with hearing, for instance, hearing. You're right. It doesn't make the sound disappear, but it's not what's... There's awareness and understanding of at that moment. So, when I was thinking in terms of your talking about, well, there can be thinking and there are concepts. The concepts are not real, cannot be awareness or understanding of the concepts, but there can of the thinking. And I think it's pointing out more the distinction between, say, the nama and the rupa. We're talking about hearing. I don't think I'm being very clear here.
Actually, it's quite straightforward. You can understand the rupa that appears to the sense door, but whatever arises the mind door can only be nama. That's the object of understanding.
Why not rupa?
Not that image. I don't mean that.
Any
yeah.
reality can be known through the mind door. Yeah. And I think that the point is that by discussing and considering and more understanding more about realities, that's the way they're known, but by thinking about various concepts or being concerned about understanding something about concepts, nothing will be known about realities, and nothing will actually be understood about concepts as opposed to realities. So thinking is real, like now there is thinking, there can be understanding of thinking now, but not by trying to work out a story about the concepts, because it doesn't matter what thinking thinks about, it's still just the reality that thinks at that moment, regardless of, like, worry, no matter what it's worried about, whether it's about the dark or the house or the bathroom, it's the worry that's the reality, not the bathroom or the dark or the house. So it always has to come back to understanding the reality at this moment.
So thinking is the reality. What it thinks about, as Jonathan says, doesn't disappear. It just isn't a reality. Like sound is a reality that is heard. That which can be seen is a reality that can be seen by seeing. Thinking is a reality, but if we start to look for a reality in what is being thought about, then we're on the wrong track.
So, nothing about concepts to be known is another way of putting it.
It's rising and falling. We are so fast, one following the other, that what appears as table and chairs, in reality, there's in between, there's so many sensed or experiences, seeing visible objects. So any of those can be the object of understanding.
Is there doubt now? Really? It slips away? In between?
Yes, no. Yeah.
Yeah. So we learn about different realities, but not at the moment when it arises. So it cannot be clear comprehension. But we have to begin, like, not about the books on this or that, but now. What is there which appears? See, learn to understand that it is a reality because it is seen or it is heard. In order to really understand that it's not I who try to have it or control it or have it at will at any time, but it's there all the time by conditions. By learning to understand anotherness of whatever appears, it will begin to understand about the no self, but not clear yet. Because when it's not self, because no one can have it at will, so what is it? It's that which is real, one at a time. Visible object is real at moment of when it appears to see, and sound is real another moment. By understanding at the moment, it means that that moment ago has gone completely, and that which appears just very short because there are other realities, so comprehension is not clear enough to understand what is in and around in this room or anywhere at all. That's why we learn just one word at a time to really see the distinction between the two great elements. One arises but cannot experience anything at all. So it's not my body, it's not my eyes, it's not my belongings, but whatever they are, that which cannot experience. And without the reality which arises and experiences, nothing will appear at all. Learn to understand reality as not self, little by little. Until when we know more about each one, it can be conditioned to develop more understanding of that as not self. But it has to be just little by little, the reality which cannot experience must be different from that which arises and experiences. Both arise and fall away. So no self, no I at all. But understanding is not clear enough at that very moment when it appears. So there must be a moment of ignorance and attachment and wrong understanding of it as something permanent.
Glenn, I just mentioned a couple of terms that have been coming up a bit, just which make it easier to follow. So one is anatta. So anatta means not self. So we talked yesterday about how seeing is a citta which experiences, not anyone who experiences it. So each of these realities is not anyone, not Sarah, not Glenn, not a table, not a thing. This is what is meant by anatta, just an element, just a reality that arises by conditions. So that is one. And the other one, which was mentioned a couple of times, is panya. Panya means right understanding. So when we talk about panya, understanding, seeing or visible object, it's referring to understanding. Did you have any reflections or particular questions from the discussions yesterday?
No, not really. I'm just trying to follow along.
And I think that that's the right way, because it's quite new.
Yeah.
And reality is now appearing. So in order to just understand the difference between each one, it's not easy, because they arise and fall away in split seconds. Continuously. For example, when we talk about seeing, attention should be that which is seen now and the seeing itself. No need to think about the name, because the reality is more important. For example, visible object, if we don't use this term, we don't know what we mean. But when there is that which is seen, no matter we call it, it is seen now. It's a reality. But right understanding is not enough to understanding it as no one in it, because as soon as one closes one's eyes, well, everything around here, see? So it's only that which appears different from moment of taking it from image, shape and form as someone, something, different moments. So without one moment at a time, there's no life. So life is not more moments at once, just one moment at a time. That's why it's very subtle and difficult to really understand just each reality at a time without thinking about the words.
And you can see a chance
that close our eyes and open, already instantly everything appears. So it's so fast and not known. How many realities not known?
At that moment you don't have to call it dosa, see? But the actual reality of dosa is different from other things. So we can understand that there are so many different realities, and all of them cannot be taken for what, self or I at all. Just learn to become accustomed to the characteristic of reality as different ones.
And also it
can be a reminder about how much more we need to keep listening and considering.
Just following on what we were saying before, I think no matter how much panya is developed, it will still be immediate. When the eyes are opened, the world appears,
right,
as concepts.
Many chittas have arisen and fallen away,
but
unknown.
Well, there may or may not be knowing, but there won't be the catching of one moment of seeing and then moments of concepts forming, as I understand it, because it all happens so quickly. But as understanding develops, there is less inclination to take those concepts as objects having some reality. But the conceptualizing, if you like, continues,
right,
at the same speed as ever.
Right. And what do you understand by when panya is developed, it comes closer or it's quicker to the reality? It also means that in that instant when panya is developed, Pandya can arise also many, many times. Right? When once it's developed, Pandya can arise.
The more it's developed, the more it arises. And I suppose for longer periods and taking different objects too. But there's still the fact that everything happens so quickly that the moments of thinking that follow the moments of seeing and hearing still present the idea of people and
sure.
things.
Sure. I mean, and if Pandya arose many times, it would not stop that forming of concepts.
Right. But the underlying view or understanding of the world would be quite different.
So for the enlightened being or highly developed Pandya, the world appears as usual, but at the moment of Pandya, there must be just one object at a time at the moment of Pandya, at that moment, and then it's followed as usual.
Right now, exactly. But now there's no understanding. Ignorance is there. But when there is more and more understanding, it has to be just as it is.
So it's simply, right now there's a lot of ignorance and thinking.
When ignorance has been eradicated, no ignorance, no attachment, and there can be many different cittas without ignorance, and also like same as ignorance arise now, Pandya can arise. But
otherwise,
still there'll be thinkings like now.
Yeah.
Like now.
Yeah, otherwise it's not Pandya.
And it's not just Pandya arises more often, but it closer to the reality. Like now, it's an idea of visible object, but when Pandya develops, it's closer and closer to directly understanding the reality.
So what is not known now is visible object, not people. Because we know people, see, but we don't know visible object.
We don't need to listen to the Buddha's teachings to be an expert in people or ideas, because we're already experts in thinking about ideas and people. So that's why it's much more precious to understand doubt or worry that appears now, or seeing or visible object, than to think about the ideas and about the concepts that are thought about.
How much there is understanding of visible object as visible object right now, see? It's there all the time. But right understanding is not enough to understanding it as it is. Learn to understand the reality is learning to become detached from ignorance, wrong understanding, and the idea of self and things. So it's not other way at all. Only hearing, considering, understanding more about what is now appearing.
Question. So we know that with kaya vinyati, body intimation, there must be the intention to convey a meaning for that to be kaya vinyati. So if we just go and just our hands move like this naturally, then that there would not be kaya vinyati there. So what about vachi vinyati? When that is at least more difficult to
the body
see.
Does not move when it's vachi vinyati, but there are conditions for sound to arise because of thinking to have such sound arise, and it works its way, the tongue and the lips, and the condition for sound is there.
So there must be also the intention to convey a meaning. So when there's snoring, something like that.
Right. When snoring or making funny noises in one's sleep, no intention to convey a meaning.
So what about
conveying a meaning, or like me trying to get attention? It's Kaya Vignetti, yes. Yes, because
Utu. Kaya Vignetti, that Utu, the sound is produced by Utu.
Moments of Kaya Vignetti, and you make a sound.
But it's not Vachi.
What about calling out in sudden pain? Something happens and
Chitta conditioned it.
Yes. There's intention?
It depends whether, like, if sometimes you stub a toe and you call out, it's intention to convey a meaning for other people around, so it depends on each moment, each chitta.
So, a rock comes and hits you on the...
Without chitta, can that sound arise?
No.
But I think Tams is a good example because there's intention to make a sound, but it's not speaking of any kind, so just Kaya Vignetti, just intention, just to get attention, to convey a meaning through the body, because it's through the body.
It's just like speaking right now.
But if it's like speaking...
Intention to speak.
Or intention to make a noise by clapping.
Or intention to move part of the body.
Kaya Vignetti.
So Kaya Vignetti is also to communicate.
Right. Known by chitta.
But not necessarily with others, like even when one stubs one's toe, and even if one's own and one cries out, it could be Vachi Vignetti. Just depends.
No Vignetti, because chitta doesn't want it to happen.
Jonathan, I'd like to go back to something you said earlier. We were talking about thinking and concept as object of thinking. The jitta that thinks experiences an object, and the object is a concept. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. And we were talking about jitta. There can be awareness and understanding of the jitta that, of the experiencing of that concept, of the jitta that thinks. And the concept, I think you said, does not disappear. Can you talk a bit more about that?
What about... We better understand what thinking is.
Okay.
So that we can understand thinking no matter on what object. Is there thinking now? Of what?
Yes.
Of what?
All sorts of things.
It follows each... process.
Yes. Yeah.
Can there be the understanding of the object of chitta at that moment?
The object of thinking?
Which follow the see. Or hearing. See? As much as we can know is thinking is not seeing, not hearing, not smelling, not tasting, not touching. And it's always follow. Moment of seeing, hearing, otherwise there cannot be idea of what is seen or what is heard at all. That's why in order to understand that thinking is different from seeing, hearing, it has to begin with that, not trying to find out, because only three, after the sense process has fallen away, pavanga, there's thinking immediately about that which is seen and heard. So it's all about thinking. When it's not seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So there's no intention to try to catch anyone or to understand, to pinpoint. But the difference between that which can experience and that which cannot experience will bring more and more understanding of the different kinds of whatever, seeing or thinking.
Yes.
Okay. And through understanding, it becomes clear that it's only realities which arise and fall away. Concepts are not real, so they don't arise, they're not conditioned, they don't fall away, they're just thought about at that moment.
They appear.
Appear.
Well,
Yeah.
They're thought about. So at a moment of thinking, it is a house or a tree or a person that is experienced at that moment. And that's all. But it's only the thinking which is real.
Yes. But John, were you about to say some concepts appear, some do not? For instance, in the nimitta.
What citta appears now? In the sense that it's not the object but can be understood that it's there. Seeing. And then thinking.
Yes.
Hearing and then thinking.
Yes.
We don't know other cittas in between at all.
If one starts talking about some concepts appearing and some not or something like that, then it's back to like brain studies. It's not understanding the reality at that moment. Because at a moment of understanding, thinking or worry, there's no idea about the dark or the house or the people or the things.
Right.
So that's why the study or the understanding has to always come back to the reality at this very moment, no matter doubt, no matter worry, thinking, seeing, visible object. Otherwise, if one's trying to work out the details about concepts, it's following the wrong path. I'm just lost and more and more lost the ideas, which is how daily life usually is. So it has to come back to what is real right now. Drowsy feeling, happy feeling, seeing, whatever.
And no name at all. Otherwise, it's a moment of trying to find out what name is there for this or that.
And perhaps one can say that when this moment of awareness, a reality is seen more as it is, but nothing else changes. Because it's not the function of panya to change thought patterns or anything like that.
That's why it needs sati or awareness. Otherwise, panya cannot understand. For example, that which experiences, see? We heard a lot, many, many times about without that, there is no being. But we are not used to understand the experiencing as not self.
And the trying to find the name for the experience, actually it's worse than useless. It's wrong path again, because it's back to trying to pinpoint, or it's all about me and my worry or thinking again, trying to catch it or understand it, so it's the wrong way again. Kunnopadom, yesterday we were talking about space as reality and space as concept. Is the space out here real or is it concept?
Before answer, we have to distinguish between the concept and reality. The reality is mean, if it's rupa, it is in one of the 28 rupa. But it's a concept, you're just thinking about that. And when we trying to understand and thinking about it, it's not knowing that. It's just a concept. That's why I talk about the space, it's a concept. But rupa, like a pariccheda rupa or a kasa rupa, is a reality. It's a one of the 28 rupa. And it's known by mind. It's different.
So everyone agrees that pariccheda space, the space between the groups of rupas, is reality. What about the open, empty space?
When you talk about the open, you talk like between rupa, right? Because your nose, your throat, ears, between things, something like that. Really, there is a rupa, a Mahabuddha rupa. but we didn't see that, but we can touch that. But we talk about the rupa, like we see the visible object of like star and moon, just a visible object, you see. But we're thinking about the range of that, or the between that is a space. Space is a concept. That's it.
Two kinds of space as realities. One is the paricheda rupa, between the kalapas of rupas, and the other is the open space, also akasa rupa, also a reality, not just a concept.
Like trying to explain the paricheda rupa between the kalapa, it's the same as the between the star and moon, that it's different.
Like the open space in the room, also reality. It's also akasa.
Reality is a rupa. I thought like I'm thinking about like what do you call the oxygen or nitrogen or stuff, or everything. It's like a mahato rupa. But we're talking about that. But we can like a touch that like a heat and cold, something like that.
Akasa rupa, is that right?
Yes.
And paricheda rupa,
yes.
Different or the same?
Question.
Yes.
There's akasa rupa, that's paricheda rupa, and there's akasa rupa, which is not paricheda rupa.
Right.
Two kinds of akasa rupa.
But when we say of akasa rupa, which is not paricheda rupa, is there any reality?
I believe so. It is a reality. It is space.
So can you experience it? The akasa?
It's asabhava, so no characteristic. It can be understood with panya.
If nothing arising at all, do you have any idea about it?
Is it unconditioned?
You mean if there was nothing to...
When it's conditioned, it is paricheda rupa, in between kalapas.
If there were no mahabhuta rupas anywhere, then there's no idea about space. But space, but because there's mahabhuta rupa...
So space is just... Completely space.
It's space, yeah. And it can be the object of understanding.
But whenever there are the four primary rupas and the other four, there are space in between each kalapa, conditioned by kamma, or conditioned by citta, or conditioned by uttu, or conditioned by ahara.
So can you say the space itself is conditioned by kamma?
Not itself.
No, not the space. The Mahabhuta rupas, right.
Depending on how the Mahabhuta rupas are
right,
conditioned.
Right. I was trying to explain to Kunnapadon last night.
Here we have a look about the akasa, which is not...
So there is the conditioned akasa rupa in between the kalapas and the unconditioned rupa, the akasa, like in the open space. So it's not a concept. It's real. Otherwise,
why asankata is not only nibbana, it's also akasa too.
Also. Is that correct, Napadon? Or something new to consider?
Yeah. I understand like this, the space between Mahatputa or group of Garapa, it's the same as like a group of stars, something like that. That we call the same thing. Like the reality is akasarupa.
The space like between stars is not paricheda, akasa paricheda rupa. Because that the paricheda akasa is between kalapas, like what we call a cup is actually consists of many groups of rupas with space in between. This is the conditioned akasa, and if the kalapa is conditioned by karma, that rupa depends on those, the kasa depends on those rupas conditioned by karma. So in that sense it's conditioned by karma too. If it's conditioned by utu, then so is the akasa rupa. So that is the paricheda rupa. But the rupa in the open space is like between stars or between earth and the sun. The open space is the unconditioned akasa rupa, another kind.
But I still have on DSG, our friend in Singapore had a quotation from the text that unconditioned rupa is really a concept, and he quoted the text, and I wanted to ask you, because he did not like to correspond with you anymore, so I was wondering about that text.
I think you mean the text in the Katawatu.
Yeah. And how is that? How can we reconcile that?
You can ask again.
Because there are two kinds of akasa, conditioned and unconditioned. Conditioned is paricheta rupa, and that which is out of condition is space, is the asankata.
What is the difference between the akasa, which is the unconditioned reality, and the conventional space?
Without the group of kalapa, which is conditioned by karma, there's no akasa in between each group.
The unconditioned, I'm asking about,
but
the
it's
akasa,
not like
which is
here,
unconditioned.
No rupa at all. See?
Must be heat or cold.
It doesn't matter, but besides that, out of that, that is called akasa, when there's no Mahabhuta rupa or anything at all.
So you mean like the concept of space might include already all these things?
We don't talk about any Mahabhuta rupa at all when we talk about akasa. Because there are four Mahabhuta rupa with the four primary rupas. But when we talk about that which is conditioned by karma, many kalapas, and that condition does not condition only one group, one kalapa, but many kalapas. So the akasa in between is conditioned by that condition too. Otherwise, we cannot separate the group. It cannot be broken at all.
That when kalapas are conditioned to arise, there must be space. There must be space.
And when it is the Samajnanayana, the kalapas appear with spaces.
But another way, that if we say something is a concept, it means that it is the object of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I thought that Kunnapadon is right, but the way of explanation is not clear. For example, when you talk about akasa as concept, it means that the akasa anywhere without the four primary rupas. But when one talks about the akasa sankhata, it has to be with, in between groups of kalapa.
So there is, when you're talking about akasa everywhere, isn't that you're referring to the asankhata akasa,
right.
And that's a concept?
It's a reality, but when we're thinking about it, it's
a
concept.
Sure.
But I think his point was before, when we talked yesterday, was because he said there's no reality out there, it's only concept. Of course we all agree when we're talking about it's a concept, but there is still the reality. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about the concept of it. The fact we're talking about the outer space shows there has to be the asankhata, the akasa rupa in order for there to be ideas about space between stars and so on. Would you agree, Kunnapadam?
So when we talk about the akasha, we talk about concept of akasha and also the rupa, the space in between kalapas too, different. Because that is conditioned by karma, because karma does not condition only big rupa without kalapa in between. Otherwise cannot be.
And I was suggesting that even in what seems like a solid, there's not only parisheta rupa, there's also akasa rupa, the other.
The space akasa is akasa rupa, which is parisheta rupa, because it's divide each kalapa.
Right. Parisheta, and also there must be other akasa.
Not by, at that very moment.
Not at that moment, but in between. Otherwise, we cannot move a hand.
Otherwise, we'd be knocking into walls and doors all the time.
So
we wouldn't be able to walk freely through the room.
And what is that, akasha?
That is a reality too. That is a reality too. It's not just thinking.
How many sankhatas are there?
Two.
Or three?
Three.
Concepts.
Yeah. Or concepts,
right. And not concepts. You can speak that. And for example, if you read in something like Melinda Panha, it talks about the asankata, akasa. But if you read in the Katavatu, when it talks about the reality and the concept. So, like now, it is a concept when we talk about the space, but it doesn't mean there isn't the underlying reality in order to talk about that concept. Is this, for example, when they talk in the Katavatu about space as reality and the Parichedha Rupa and the concept only, Ajahn, are they talking there about the concept or about the asakanta?
We cannot go in between kalapas.
Right. Could you explain more about that? Because that Katavatu text I found difficult.
We have the book here.
Okay.
A letter.
English and Pali, please.
Because last day, Kunnapadam was suggesting that the abhinya that can go through this is between kalapas. I said that's not possible.
Possible.
Between kalapas or through the space, the
you
other
can
space?
Go through because there's so many spaces.
But not between parichedha.
It is akasa. Parichedha because it's in between, while the other akasa has
But how can we say that parichedha is conditioned by uttu or by kamma?
From nothing? Then kalapas with space.
So in that case, it would be parichedha rupa conditioned by utu at that time.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to go back to walking through this room.
Yes.
Forget about the opinion.
Yes. Because there are rooms to go through.
So is this the unconditioned space between here and there?
Do we have to call it this or that? Because
no,
there must be kalapas in between.
So it's this. If it's not parichedha rupa, then it must be the other.
So it's not parichedha rupa.
It is when there are kalapas in between.
Okay, so kalapas. Okay.
No. Only this kalapa.
It's only parichedha rupa here.
Oh.
There must be the other space too.
Yeah.
One's
not walking through the notebook.
Difficult.
So really, we just need to understand space as a reality. It is a reality.
Two kinds.
The kind between the
sankata and asankata.
Does that make sense? Sankata and asankata? Okay, now? Nina, what doesn't make sense?
I find it difficult when walking in between in a room that there must be kalapas too. And then in between is space. Or is there asankhata, unconditioned space, when we are in a room and walking?
Both.
I didn't quite get the point.
The dust,
yeah.
On the street? You can go through, yeah, the dust.
Not completely empty. Yeah.
Pollution?
The air here is not completely empty.
Right.
So it's both kinds of space.
Right, so you can't just say that before, because we can move through, it means there are no kalapas, because if it's dust, then one can still... And people also ask about, what about in the water, because still kalapas and...
Everywhere.
Everywhere. So still always two kinds, yeah.
Almost
two kinds.
But we can't distinguish.
And if
why
we...
do we have?
If we try to pinpoint, like, how many kalapas between here and there.
I see. Yeah, that's clear.
And sometimes in the text, like those details in the Atasalani, and it's not always clear whether they're referring to the conditioned or the unconditioned, and sometimes it's to both. So I think, yes, because one can't always pinpoint.
Except for Nibbana, when we distinguish between concept and reality, we say that because reality arises and falls away. But in the case of the Akasa Rupa, that is unconditioned, so it's not arises and falls away. Why can it not be a concept?
Because there are three kinds of asankhata.
Concept and akasa and nibbana.
And I believe that of the three types of asankhata, one cannot be the object of right understanding, two can.
Nibbana.
And space.
Yeah.
It's like a term we learn in the beginning, it's everything is either concept or reality, and then we start studying more about nimitta of reality, and so more and more fine details.
Did you find the passage better? We're all waiting.
It's a bit of problems, wasn't it?
Yeah. So sorry. Okay.
Because it's mainly that the text in the Katavatthu and even its commentary that people often quote, because it says, apart from the Parichedha Rupa spaces concept, like Nopadom said, but it just depends how it's being read or understood. So that's why even the Abhidhamma and its commentaries have to be read and considered very carefully. Are you familiar with that passage?
And who's the answer, and who's the one who asks, and the one who answers in Katavatthu?
The one so complicated.
Not the one who doesn't know anything at all.
Yeah.
They both are very good.
Yeah.
So they know that the question means this, or the answer
okay.
means that.
Right.
See?
They understood what is implied in
yeah.
the question.
Yeah.
I trying to correct skin about the akasa. The first shana about the arupa has the akasa or aramana or the object of shana or something like that. It's like a pramat, and it's like a liriti and the panja too.
Right, but when it comes to object of jhana, it's except for the one, all are concepts, right?
Two.
Except for two.
Second and fourth jhana.
All right. So when it's akasa, that's a concept. Yeah.
But what's it a concept of? It has to be a concept of reality, concept of open space. So concept of the akasa we're just talking about. Otherwise, how can there be a concept or sign of it? Just like patui datu, it has to be concept about reality, about patui. If there were no patui, there couldn't be the wise reflection on earth element, and same with akasa.
I think that of what we take, for example, red color, blue color, see? All a concept, not reality. So what we take for akasa now, it can be object of jhana, that nothing else except akasa.
In that case, it's not concept of reality, but just a thin idea.
Is that what you're saying?
It's the idea, like idea of blue,
like
red,
the idea of blue.
Yellow.
But it is like the idea of blue, red. If there was no visible object, then there couldn't be any idea of blue or red. And the same thing, if there wasn't the open space, the unconditioned akasa element, there couldn't be the concept about it. So actually it's a good example to show that there is the unconditioned akasa rupa.
Because in order to develop calm, there must be panya. It's not just see that object without panya at all. Why akasa? Nothing. Only nothing.
Just empty. No kalapas in it.
The empty space.
Like different colors too. Red, only red. Blue, only blue.
Absolutely nothing to get excited about
at all, to be interested in.
No flowers, no thing in it. To be attached to.
So other asabawa rupa, they don't have any characteristic to be known.
Asabawa.
Asabawa.
How, is rupa or not rupa?
It's rupa.
So it is rupa, but it doesn't have its own
its
sabawa.
Own sabawa. But they, apart from the akasa, they are conditioned because they arise together with other rupas.
When we talk about rupa, it is rupa.
Mm. But they depend on other rupas
other
for their
rupa,
arising,
right.
Like the
Mahabhuta rupa, and
or like the four stages of rupa, mm-hmm. depends on the rupa itself. The arising of rupa
itself. And
so.
Mm-hmm. And why do we think about this?
Because it's daily life.
Is this daily life?
Space.
No, I mean,
yeah. The other non-parijena rupas, right?
In order to understand correctly, otherwise people would claim, I have attained such and such jhana, see, not enough conditions for that at all. Not to be fooled.
Right, or they claim there is direct understanding of the asabawa rupas now, like bodily intimation or speech intimation. They think that because they can see the moving arms, there is some direct understanding of kaya vinyati. They don't understand what is the reality at all.
And they claim that it can recollect previous lives and know the other previous life of the others too. See? No reason. Just to be wise to reality as much in order to understand reality right now, see. Or no matter we learn a lot, just to understand whatever appears.
Sundara has a sutta that we were discussing, or he brought up, and I think it was a question about dana and chaga. Dana is generosity.
Yet the Viyagga Pajja Sutta, which deals with conditions of welfare for lay people, there are four conditions for worldly welfare and four conditions for spiritual welfare. The four conditions for worldly welfare are Uttana Sampada, which is having right effort and exertion, a
Araka Sampada, which is protecting your worldly wealth. Kalyana Mittata, which is having good friends, obviously. And Samara Jivata. The question I had with Samara Jivata was often, because the Buddha was speaking in the town of the Kolya, which was the Buddha's wife's family, and many of them were farmers. So the question arose in my mind again, although we've talked about it before, was how can farming be right livelihood, because there often is a lot of killing involved or taking of life. That's my first question.
Is it Kusala?
What, excuse me, Ajahn, what?
Because wealth is the result of Kusala, no matter in what way.
True.
While one reads whatever in Tipitaka or Sutta or whatever, condition for that must be Kusala.
True. True. But this question of having a livelihood which often involves taking of life.
With Kusala or Akusala?
Taking of life.
It's more than just reading. It has to know Gita, which.
True.
Is there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True. True. So you're saying obviously it's about intention.
Yes, so when, for example, one's ploughing the field, no, it depends on any intention. Usually the intention is not to kill or harm. So it always comes back to this moment, like when we walk out and on the path, many insects are trodden on, but no intention to kill or harm at those moments.
I suppose I'm just paying the devil's advocate to some extent here, but like when you've got a it's different when you're walking out there. I can understand that. That's clear to me. But when you've got a plower and you know you can see all the birds up there on the trees, they're waiting.
So it means right livelihood, no matter in what field.
I was going to say, sometimes the Buddha named certain occupations mm-hmm. that were not, he recommended lay people to avoid. So that's talking about occupation, line of business. So the question here is he talking about a particular occupation, or is he talking about right livelihood? And right livelihood is, no matter what the occupation, right conduct in the course of one's livelihood.
And so, it depends on kusala and akusala moments too. Does it include everything?
So no matter what the occupation, there can still be right livelihood.
Oh, totally, yeah. Totally. Yeah. I accept that.
Well, you can do it honestly or dishonestly, for example. You can conduct an honest business or a dishonest business, regardless of the nature of the merchandise. So if it's conducted honestly, then it's right livelihood. It's not wrong livelihood at that moment.
I thought that there were some jobs that the Buddha said to be.
Yes, he did. That's what I said. Some occupations he advised were to be avoided. Selling poisons.
Yes, right.
For example.
Right.
But even if you are selling poisons, there can still be right or wrong livelihood in the course of that business.
Different moments, of course.
Yes, yes.
The person who sells poisons doesn't necessarily wish for the death of any particular being. Poisons may be used in commercial processes for smelting gold, for example. So we have to understand that it's really moment to moment livelihood.
Even being a school teacher, good one or bad one?
Well, the judges you've mentioned, Ajahn, before, who accepts bribes. Anyway, the other one in that sutta was four types of of spiritual welfare, which was sila, panya, sila, chaga, panya, and sadha. Now, I just would like perhaps you to talk about, Ajahn, this aspect of chaga.
What is chaga?
Chaga, well, it's often translated as, sometimes it's translated as liberality.
From?
Well,
akusala.
Yeah, that's right. It can mean two things, from, well, forgiving, but also abandoning akusala.
So it depends on that very moment, whether it's that or not, or just like purchasing, buying, exchanging.
So it can have that double meaning of giving
akusala
away.
And akusala for sure.
So whatever one reads about, it's always referring to cheetahs, kusala, akusala. Even one works in a pharmacy, they're poisons, but it just always comes back to the intention at the moment. Or even if one is working in a wine shop, again, it depends on the intention. No intention for the sales staff, for the customer to become intoxicated, for example. So it's always about kusala and akusala, when one's being kind and helping to bundle up the package. Different moments, different
cheating. I mean, I used to think that if I open a restaurant, I'm not going to sell alcohol. But, you know, people coming to a restaurant, some might want alcohol. So the intention is to give them what they want.
That's what's not good.
It's just in for doctor too.
This is for the consumer.
The guests they consume like for enjoy, just for enjoying, not for purpose.
We enjoy eating, no matter what.
No, no.
Not good about alcohol. Alcohol has no moral quality to it.
It's taking so much alcohol that it affects your behavior, and there would be more inclination to akusala, your moral behavior. It's not the alcohol itself that's the problem, it's the consuming so much that it affects your judgment, your behavior, your actions, and can lead to doing harm to others. But I understand where you're coming from. If we provide the alcohol, it's an opportunity for others to overindulge and cause harm. But I guess in a restaurant, it's not the owner's intention to do that.
Yeah, it could depend on the way it's promoted. Having it available is not the same as encouraging people to overindulge, you could say.
If wrong livelihood depends only on the wrong conduct at a given moment, so what is the difference between wrong conduct and wrong livelihood?
When it's not livelihood,
it's wrong conduct. So when it's conducted for
in the
one's
course of one's livelihood.
And I think livelihood here probably means for the purpose of sustaining one's life. So obviously one's occupation is one, but not necessarily the sole context.
I totally agree that, you know, for clear for any occupations there can be wrong livelihood, that is for sure. But for certain jobs like the Buddha mentioned, although there's true, there's different moments, but almost everyone is doing these things just for profits, right? Just for making money. I think very few of them do it for the purpose of intoxicating people or killing others. But why the Buddha still said that these are activities that are to be avoided?
Well, possibly because they usually necessarily involve a lot of taking of life, harming other beings. If you're running a slaughterhouse, it's difficult to avoid the fact that other beings are being slaughtered, life is being taken. But it doesn't mean that every moment there is wrong livelihood.
Yes, that's for sure. Not every moment.
As we know that in the deeper sense, in any sutta we read, actually what's being referred to are different moments of kusala, sila, akusala, sila. So even if he's talking about this livelihood of selling poisons, actually he's just talking about akusala, moments of akusala, when there is the intention to kill or to harm in some way. Because when one thinks in terms of a situation, oh, I shouldn't work in a restaurant because of alcohol, this or that, then it's forgetting all about conditioned dhammas at this moment, kusala, akusala, any moment.
When is it said wrong livelihood or right livelihood? Because it refers to only one moment, and it should be kusala, right? If it's right livelihood, or it's when the kusala, the citta that is involving in earning one's life is called wrong livelihood. Or can you say more about that nature?
Earning money, like even for the monk, there is right moments of right livelihood and wrong livelihood. So moments of akusala in the course of that daily living and responsibilities and jobs, as opposed to moments of akusala leading to harming, which is for fun, outside that normal daily living or livelihood. So it's different factor, but it's still just referring to particular cheetahs, that condition speech or deeds.
So suppose that I am a wine shop owner. I sell wine to one customer. At that moment, my motivation is just to make money. So that
is it
moment,
wrong?
It's akusala.
It's wrong to make money?
No, it's not wrong. No, just trying to clarify what is the citta which is wrong livelihood.
It just comes back to knowing the difference between kusala moments from akusala moments. By discussing situations, we can't give an answer. Because the person who sells the wine, you say his motivation is just to make money. Well, it's not necessarily so, because at the moment he's serving the customer, he can be polite or impolite. He can be considerate or not. So no need to generalize or try and work it out in a theoretical manner. The price that he is charging has been set, so there may not be any thought of profit at that moment.
Yes, but it's just because if it's not okay, that's for sure that everything comes down to citta and cittasika. So there must be the citta, that is the moments of wrong livelihood, right?
Like now, so many akusala moments, so any time, not just working in the wine shop, but helping people around in the temple. So many akusala moments, even when one's supposedly giving or paying respect to the moments, kusala, akusala, sila, at different moments. So many different cheetahs, and in that instance, thinking of one's helping one's family, following one's responsibilities like it talks about in the sutta, preserving one's wealth, different cheetahs, different moments.
That's why I think it's very difficult to understand the line between what is strong livelihood and what is right livelihood.
No, it's kusala and akusala. So what's difficult to understand from your point of view is how a person who sells alcohol could have kusala moments.
No, he can have kusala moments,
for sure.
So those
moments are not wrong livelihood?
No, those are not. So which moments are wrong?
Well, conducting the business honestly or dishonestly, for example. The underlying assumption is if a person's selling alcohol, they're encouraging people to become intoxicated, but I don't think that's a correct assumption to make. So there may not be any specific moments that you can characterize as wrong livelihood in the course of a day's business. But the reason the occupation is discouraged is because it may involve a lot of wrong livelihood.
But if its nature is more in the effect of overcharging or not overcharging, then they should be talking more about that aspect rather than the activities itself.
It's like the selling of poisons, for example. It may or may not involve supplying things that are going to cause the death of other beings, because, as I said, the poisons are used in commercial manufacturing processes.
But if someone walks in and asks you, which is the best
rat poison?
That would be...
Right.
Now, if someone walks in and asks you, which is the
best rat poison, and you're choosing the best one, the most effective one, then that might be, I don't know, it's akusla definitely.
Or maybe not.
You're just showing, yeah.
Skills and tendencies accumulate and repeated life after life, perhaps. So maybe it's from a longer term viewpoint that those particular kinds of livelihood are recommended to be avoided.
Just selling the poisons, and the customers want to go to the shop and say you want the poisons that to kill some certain kind of pesticide, and you still sell. In that case, it's not. It's like you already know that the person will use that pesticide for the certain purpose, and in that case, it's wrong livelihood.
Is it wanting to bring the end of a life of a being?
It's difficult to tell.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's not his problem, right?
Suppose I come and ask you, can you give me a rat poison? I'm thinking about the rat I want to kill. You're not thinking about the rat I want to kill. You're just thinking about the product.
Have a very
scientific approach to the whole thing, and this one works in this way and another one works in a different way, and there's different chemical properties and so forth.
Sure, we'll say just depending on intention, that's all. No matter in what situation.
It's like the example of the puppy dog being taken to the vet to move it off leash. The intention is to look after the puppy dog, and for the vet the intention is to look after the dog. So it all comes down to the intention. If you think and think about situations, it can't be understood. It's only by understanding intentions.
While we're in Vietnam, one person approached me about a problem with his or her children who he or she thought had worms. And should the children be given medicine for the worms, because it may involve killing the worms?
You've got kids, they've got worms, you give them medicine. And can we say that it depends on jitta or intention only?
Yeah. Well, the intention is, I don't know, I'm supposed to give them medicine. I don't know if it's going to kill worms or not.
It dies before you kill.
It dies.
Before.
Yes. Exactly.
They don't like the taste,
so
they leave.
I was just thinking of that point, Tom, you said before about selling alcohol, but I wanted to make a comment that somewhere in the Tripitaka, I remember reading about a woman whose husband was a hunter, and she used to give him every morning, just hand him his bow and arrow. And that sounds strong, but she was a sotapanna. And there was, and many of the Sakyans were soldiers and sotapannas. So, it does, I can see, I don't find it easy at times when I think about this one. I find it difficult, but I can see it. It's a moment-by-moment thing.
Yeah,